I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Big news yesterday that CVS Caremark, the country's largest drugstore chain in overall sales, will stop selling cigarettes and other tobacco products by October. They are becoming more of a healthcare provider, and the CEO of CVS said, "We just came to the decision that cigarettes and providing healthcare just don't go together in the same setting." Well, they're going to lose something like $2 billion in sales. Why did they decide to do this? And how important might this be as an inspiration to other places that sell cigarettes to do the same, and to making it more difficult to find a place to buy cigarettes? Does that have anything to do with lessening the number of people who smoke in America? We talk about all of that and about 50 years of tobacco control efforts in this country, and really they've been quite successful. Our guest this hour is Dr. Stephen Schroeder of the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. He's a distinguished professor of health and health care. He also heads the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center and works with leaders of more than 50 American health professional organizations and healthcare institutions to increase the cessation rate for smokers. He wrote a piece published just yesterday, February 5th, in the Journal of American Medical Association on ending sales of tobacco products in pharmacies. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Schroeder. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Dr. Schroeder, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So why would a pharmacy, a drugstore lose $2 billion in sales?
Well, they thought about it really long and hard, and I think your setup really got to the issue. I think CVS is positioning itself much more as a handler of healthcare issues, places where people can walk in, get flu shots, get their allergies diagnosed, see a nurse practitioner or a PA, and all at the same time, while they're doing that, they're selling the most deadly product in the world. So they've been thinking long and hard on this, and my co-author on the paper that you mentioned, Troy Brennan, who's the chief medical officer of CVS, has been working with the CVS leadership, and they finally said it. We don't think it's compatible with our new mission, which they're going to call CVS for Health, that we can keep selling cigarettes. And I think it's their hope that over the long run, they will actually profit from this move.
I think you're right. I think they will. Does it make any difference, though, in making the rate of smokers now go even lower? If you can't get them at CVS, won't you just go across the street to Walgreens?
Well, our article said that. He said it's likely that most of the people who are not able to get their cigarettes at CVS will go elsewhere. But I think there's some overall benefits in terms of smoking rates. One is most smokers know that it's almost all smokers know it's bad for them. About 70% of them want to quit. And some people quit on a planned basis. Others do it very spontaneously. And my guess is that some people, this will put them over the edge. And they'll say, this does it. It's time for me to stop smoking. With others, there are some data that show that the more inconvenient it is to get cigarettes or to smoke them, the more likely people are to quit, or the less they're going to smoke if they keep smoking. And then finally, kids going with their parents in drugstores or even by themselves, when they see the advertisements for cigarettes, that's an inducement for them to start. CVS won't have those advertisements.
Interesting. So this is really a significant drop. 42% of adults were smokers in 1965, 18% today. That's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, some people still smoke, but that's quite a lessening.
It's been said that this was the major public health triumph of the 20th century.
Wow.
That said, we got a long way still to go, too. And there's almost 500,000 people dying each year from smoking. There are about 42 million smokers. And increasingly, smoking is concentrated among the less well-off. I'm probably more senior than most of the people listening to the show, and I grew up in a home where both my parents smoked. My parents were educated. Most of their parents smoked. my wife and I don't know anyone on a social basis who still smokes. So who are those 43 million? They're the poor. They're the less well-educated. They're people with who are grappling with mental illness, with substance use problems, who are homeless, who are in prisons, who are in the LGBT group. So it's increasingly a marginalized group of smokers, and that's a problem because the people who should be involved in setting policies to help smokers quit think that the battle has been won. So back to your question, yes, it's been great progress, but we shouldn't feel like it's all done now.
And those people who are poor can least afford to buy cigarettes, which are pretty expensive now.
They're very expensive. One of the reasons they're so costly is that states have been, even states with anti-tax governors, have felt comfortable raising the state price, the state tax on a pack of cigarettes for two reasons. One is that almost everybody thinks it's a good deal, even smokers. And secondly, it's a source of state revenue.
Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing. I used to be a smoker. It's a very difficult thing to quit smoking. It is highly, highly addictive, wouldn't you say?
Yes. How did you quit?
I got sick.
That's a good reason. So people quit for really several reasons. One is their doctor or their nurse or their dentist or the dental hygienist tells them to. Secondly, their kids or friends tell them to. Third, it becomes denormalized so that they get the sense, boy, you can't smoke in restaurants, you can't smoke in bars, you can't smoke in the office, you can't buy them at CVS, maybe I should stop. And then finally, often getting ill is a signal. Sometimes it's a bad illness, like a heart attack or lung cancer, but often it's just a cold or a bronchitis, and people make the sort of personal connection that their smoking isn't making it better.
Mm-hmm. So what has been most effective in the last 50 years in lowering the rates so substantially? Was it taxes, more expensive? Was it just a social thing that, hey, you can't smoke outside here, you can't smoke anywhere, it's just not an acceptable form of behavior anymore?
Well, there, it's not any one thing. It's a combination of, as you said, the fact that cigarettes are being taxed, so they're more costly, and people are sensitive to price, that there are increasing number of restrictions in where you can smoke in a public place, that there are now drugs to help smokers quit. There are counter-marketing campaigns, and this year, 2014, we'll see three of them, two by governmental agencies, the FDA and the CDC, and one by the Legacy Foundation. So it's all of those. And then it's probably more of the sense of wellness that people in this country are thinking more about how can they live healthy lives. And finally, of course, it's the science. So the science is what stimulated the 1964 report of the Surgeon General, the science that shows that both smoking and exposure to secondhand smoke can cause people to be ill and to die.
Mm-hmm. I know that California, where you are in Massachusetts, have banned the sale of tobacco products in pharmacies led by San Francisco and Boston. What difference has that made, Dr. Schroeder?
I don't know if we know whether the rates of smoking in San Francisco or Boston have gone down, but I doubt that CVS would have done this had the local communities in San Francisco and Boston not made that first step. And I want to hereby really salute a whole number of academic pharmacists who have been years saying, we are really uncomfortable that our colleagues have to ply their profession, which is to help people and to get people the right medications. At the same time, they're working under a roof that's selling these deadly products. So a lot of social forces have come to bear.
And I think that you noted in your article that no other country has a pharmacy that will also distribute cigarettes.
Yeah, most other countries, at least in the developed world, and I've been to third world countries too, they just sell drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't sell Twinkies, they don't sell chewing gum, they don't sell shaving cream, they just sell drugs.
Yeah. So what happened? CVS is big, Walgreens is the other big one. What do you think Walgreens executives are saying today and this week after the CVS announcement?
Well, I would add Rite Aid, too. Those are the three largest chains. They're quoted as saying, this is something we're talking about. When I talked to press yesterday, my answer to that question was, it's not a question of whether, but when. I don't know when they're going to stop, but I think the pressures will be so great, and I think they may lose business.
And what will those pressures be?
pressures will be, how can you reconcile being a place where you're selling things to make people better, at the same time you're selling things to make people worse? And if CVS can do it, why can't you can do it? Why can't you do it? And my guess is there are going to be some people, I don't know how many, I'll be one, that will funnel my pharmacy business into CVS now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there will be people who will do that, I'm sure. And if you have a lot of pharmacies deciding not to do this, then cigarettes are going to be, I would imagine a lot of people buy cigarettes in drugstores.
What I'm told is only about 15% of tobacco of cigarette sales are in drugstores.
Really?
The largest single seller is Walmart.
Walmart.
Mm-hmm. But there's also grocery stores, and I would predict that people are going to wonder about grocery stores next. You know, you go there to get good food. You go there to get an organic tomato, and yet down the aisle, in view of your little kid that you're taking shopping with you, are packs of cigarettes. So
yeah.
That's going to be the next pressure place, I would guess.
I'll get in trouble for this, but I'm not certain that Walmart will be terribly socially conscious about this. Perhaps they will.
We'll wait and see. I've got my fingers and legs crossed.
Okay. Let's take some phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. And our guest is Dr. Stephen Schroeder. He's of the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, Distinguished Professor of Health and Healthcare, Division of General Internal Medicine, Department of Medicine. He also heads the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center, which is a pretty big deal. He works with a lot of health professional organizations and healthcare institutions to increase the number of people who are saying no to cigarettes. So we're looking at this CVS announcement yesterday that they're, if you didn't hear the story, they're going to stop selling cigarettes and other tobacco products by October. Big announcement. What do you think? Let's go to your phone calls. Bob in Cudahy is our first caller. Hey, Bob.
Hey, I was on the internet the other day on Facebook, and I went to a link that was shown that had a comparison price of drugs that were offered by CVS versus all of the other people. CVS had the most expensive drugs in several categories, as opposed to others. I mean, Walmart's was a lot cheaper. Walgreens was cheaper. Costco was the cheapest. But it looks like the way they have their price, pricing of drugs, it's going to more than make up for their loss in selling tobacco. Any information at your end to confirm that?
I don't think they have any plans of increasing their prices for any of the other things that they sell. I think the way, and again, I don't work for CVS. We didn't take any money in doing this, and I was pleased that they made this step. I don't know what their pricing strategy is, but I think they're planning to put other products where the cigarettes used to be and hope to make up some of that revenue. But I think they're understanding that they could take a short-term, maybe even a long-term loss, but that is... it's incompatible with their goal, vision, and mission to keep selling cigarettes.
And do you have any idea of knowing, as the pharmacies, the drugstores, become places of more health care, they're already getting flu shots and shingles shots, and now there will be some medical attention given, and already it is the case in some of these drugstores that there might be somebody there to counsel you on your sore throat. Is it bronchitis? What is it? What's wrong with you? As they move more in that direction with the Affordable Care Act, then that could be another source of income in a way, couldn't it?
Sure. And if you think about it, it's almost like going to your doctor's office. When you go to your doctor's office, you don't expect to see a cigarette vending machine there.
Right. Absolutely. It's hard to even imagine those days, and they weren't that long ago. Look at all the doctors who used to smoke, too.
Yeah, well, I think those were actors. They were doctors. In some countries, like in Portugal... And in China, 50% of male doctors smoke.
No.
In Portugal, about 35% of doctors smoke. In the United States, I'm proud to say it's 1% of doctors smoke.
50% in China? Are you serious?
Of the male doctors, yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That'll change, but it's just slow to happen. We go to Jim in Oklahoma. Hi, Jim.
Hey, hi, Kathleen. How are you? Thanks.
Thank you.
I want to talk a little bit about e-cigarettes. And first of all, let me say that the idea of a healthcare-related retailer, it's a no-brainer that they should quit selling tobacco products because if nothing else, it hurts the image. Okay, now, some of us who go to e-cigarettes actually don't want to quit the drug nicotine because we like the effects, some of us, and I'm one of those people. I smoke hand-rolled cigarettes with no filter for 40 years, and although they're cheaper than, conventional tailor-mades, I guess they call them, they damage the lungs far worse. And surprisingly, I had a battery of pulmonary tests done a week after I quit, and the guy said my lungs are in great shape, which I can't explain that except for the guy upstairs. So, there is some merit that cigarettes don't hurt everyone.
Yeah. But you're using e-cigarettes now.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait. I am. Right.
All right. What do you think about those as a way to quit, Dr. Schroeder, and whether or not it's harmful to stay on them?
So we could go on for an hour on e-cigarettes. They're the sort of hot topic. Let me answer a couple of things. One is what you didn't ask, but you were probably thinking is, does CVS sell e-cigarettes? And I asked Dr. Brennan that. I also went into a local CVS pharmacy where I live in California, and the answer is no. And they don't plan to start it as a substitute for stopping selling cigarettes. Secondly, if you were my patient, I would say the most important thing you could do is quit using all forms of tobacco, including nicotine. But if you couldn't do that, and you said, is it safer for me to do the e-cigarette than a regular cigarette? I would say absolutely. There's controversy, though. Some people think that using the e-cigarette will mean you'll keep smoking and you'll just do what they call dual use. Jim, it sounds like you've not done that, so that's great. You're going to be a lot healthier than if you kept smoking. There's also some concern that the e-cigarette isn't harmless. And, in fact, there have been no good safety studies. So the FDA is studying this. Other people are. I don't know the answer, but I'd be really surprised if the e-cigarette is more dangerous than a regular cigarette. And then finally, some people are really concerned that because the e-cigarettes are being sold as sexy and modern, that they're going to entice young people to start with them, and then they'll use that as a gateway drug into a regular cigarette.
Mm-hmm. Just the way regular cigarettes were sold when they came on the market, right? They were sexy and...
Well, they still are sold that way, yeah.
Are they?
Yep.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about CVS's announcement yesterday that come October, you can no longer buy cigarettes in their stores, and CEOs saying they came to the decision that cigarettes and providing health care just don't go together in the same setting. Dr. Stephen Schroeder is our guest this hour. He's been working as a distinguished professor of health and health care and director of the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center in trying to get the rate, the number of people who smoke in this country, even lower than it is right now. And a lot of good has happened in the last 50 years in this country. Will this add to the number of people who smoke now and will want to quit? And will it keep younger people from starting? What do you think? Two more phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. We go next to Jeff in La Crosse. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing today?
All right, Jeff, how are you?
Good. Yeah, I just have a couple comments on Dr. I do appreciate CVS getting rid of cigarettes. I think that's a good idea. But, CVS also sells alcohol. When do they get rid of alcohol? And then you talked about grocery stores. Should they sell cigarettes because you go get an organic tomato? Well, grocery stores sell Twinkies. I mean, where does this end?
So that's a great question. People wonder if this is a slippery slope. In my mind, in the mind of most public health experts, there is a real difference. It turns out, and I'm glad that this is true because I enjoy an evening drink, that there is a U-shaped curve related to drinking. That is, the people with the longest life expectancies are those who drink in moderation. So people who are teetotalers and people who do excess liquor get in trouble with their health. But someone who drinks in a responsible way actually does okay. So alcohol is not by itself a harmful product. Obviously, a lot of people get into trouble from drinking, and there's drunk driving, and there's alcoholic cirrhosis and lots of things. But alcohol by itself isn't harmful. Twinkies, Coca-Cola, beverages, cakes, pies, ice cream, they're all, when done to excess, are a problem. They may make a contribution to the fact that there are far too many people in this country who are overweight. But when done, when consumed in a moderate way, they're not harmful. They're healthy. And that's the distinction that I make.
Thanks, Jeff, for the call. Eric in Endeavor. Hi.
Hey, I got a question for your guest. I totally agree that cigarettes and healthcare don't go together, and I couldn't agree more. My question is, will CVS keep selling OxyContin and Percocets, and how do you justify that, and what's the life expectancy curve on those drugs?
Well, again, I'm not a spokesman for CVS, but as a doctor, I know that those are analgesics, which when used in an appropriate manner can ease pain. And pain is one of the things that people want to treat. So I'm going to guess that they'll keep selling those because they're legal products, as are tobacco, and they can be very helpful when used right. A car, you know, you can make the same argument about a car. Cars can kill people, but cars are really great to use to get from one place to a different one. So the difference with tobacco is the cigarette is the only product that I know of which, when used as intended, kills people.
Hmm.
There's no safe dose. It makes people ill. And so that's the kind of line in the sand that I draw.
So do you think, Dr. Schroeder, that they should simply not be sold at all?
It's a legal product.
Right.
So right now, and there's a huge market for them. But my hope is that they'll be harder and harder to get, and that we'll wind up with a hardcore. There are some people are saying, let's get to 10% of smokers, people in the United States smoking by 2020, 10 by 20, and maybe that'll happen. My hope is that the social consequences of smoking, of selling them, will be such that more and more retailers will have second thoughts about it.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Eric, for the call. Dave in Appleton, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to tell your guest that you mentioned people might switch their pharmacies. Well, the announcement came out yesterday morning from CVS, and by last night when I checked my Facebook, not only had my wife but two of my relatives and myself all said, we're switching pharmacies. We're not currently CVS pharmacies, but it's reasonably close, and we're going to do it because we believe exactly in what they're doing and are willing to support the greater health and the greater good. And there's a lot more of us non-smokers who would just like to see no cigarettes anywhere than there are smokers. And so that's just a comment, and you can react to that.
All right.
Actually, Dave, you should stand in line for a minute. Let me suggest that you write a letter to the editor that says that, because I think that one of the things that Rite Aid and Walgreens are going to be doing is watching what happens. And if they see they're going to be losing customers, this will be a real stimulus for them to make the economic argument that now that CVS has taken the lead, they've got to do the right thing, too. Mm. So thank you for your comments. Thank your wife and your kids.
Thanks, Dave. And do you have a handle? Can you get a handle on how many people will do exactly what Dave and his wife and friends are doing?
I don't. I don't know that. It's one of the things that I thought about. I think a whole lot of my friends are going to do it. But this is a country with 330 million people, so I don't know.
You can't speak for everybody, I guess. Huh? Okay. Let's go to Travis next in Buffalo City. Hi, Travis.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to ask about smokeless tobacco. I've been doing this for about 20 years now. I've quit several times on and off. And what would you say to someone like me to help me quit chewing tobacco?
Wow. You should talk to Joe Garagiola. Do you have a memory of Joe Garagiola?
No, I have not.
He was the talkative baseball catcher who was on a television show. And he got in his mind that baseball players should stop chewing. He wound up finding a former center fielder for the Detroit Tigers named Bill Tuttle, who had gotten cancer of his mouth from chewing, and his face was disfigured.
Mm.
And Bill and his wife, Gloria, and Joe Garagiola went down to spring training, and he met with all the young baseball players in the major leagues and showed them Bill Tuttle. So is it safer than smoking cigarettes? Probably. But a lot of people have gotten cancer. And so make sure that you go to the dentist, have the dentist check you out, make sure you don't have any precancerous lesions. It's not healthy.
Is it really Travis, is it highly addictive? Do you feel like you have to have it?
Yes.
You
and
do.
It's also, I mean, in small town Wisconsin, I know I'm speaking for several people, it's actually more of a sociable type of thing.
Really?
And, you know, I always hear about anti-smoking campaigns, but I never really hear much about smokeless tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
Check what the dentists have to say. Ask your dentist or your dental hygienist what he or she thinks. The other thing is, of course, it's the nicotine that makes you keep chewing. Now, there are less harmful forms of chew tobacco, such as snus, S-N-U-S, that they're using over in Sweden. They're not harmless, but they're less harmful than regular old dip.
Can you buy that here, snus?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Travis, very much for your call. Gary in Marble, Minnesota. Hi, Gary.
Afternoon. I remember reading you. I was in either Dear Abby or Ann Landers' column a long time ago. She said that most people begin smoking because they have learned to believe it's the adult thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, later on in life, most people quit smoking because it is the adult thing to do. And what most people don't comprehend is, given the alternatives we have learned to allow ourselves, we always do what we want. And the problem is people have to understand that if they want to quit, they just have to want to not do it bad enough to quit smoking. And one other quick comment, there's a woman named Ann Wilson Schaaf who has a book out titled When Society Becomes an Addict that talks about how prevalent addictive behaviors are in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's what I got for today. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
my comment is that most smokers want to quit. And just like our previous caller who probably knows he shouldn't chew, it's really hard to quit. And I think, Kathleen, you said it was hard
mm-hmm.
for you to quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of sympathy for the smoker who would like to quit and can't. The good news is Dr. Michael Fiore of the University of Wisconsin in Madison and his colleagues and others have shown evidence that your chances of quitting are greater if you get counseling and use one of the 7 approved drugs by the FDA to help you quit. Should also say the good news is there are now more ex-smokers in the United States than there are current smokers. So when people ask me about that, I say, hate the smoke, love the smoker.
Exactly. Thank you very much for calling. What about young people? I've heard statistics every now and then that there are still a number of teenagers who start smoking every year, and some are going to find it very hard to quit. Is that who starts now?
So the data on that are that it used to be that almost everyone who starts smoking, who becomes a smoker, starts before age 18. That number has crept up now. So now almost everyone who becomes a smoker starts by age 22. So youth smoking between age 12 and 17, is at a modern low. Mm. But smoking in the age 18 through 30 age group is at the highest level of any of our population.
Oh, my.
So young people are still smoking. They still smoke on college campuses. But in general, they've shared in the decline in smoking rates that the rest of the population has had.
Mm-hmm. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our lines have been filled. There are some openings now. And Dr. Stephen Schroeder is our guest, University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, director of the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center. We're talking about the announcement yesterday by CVS, the country's largest drugstore chain in overall sales, that they will stop selling cigarettes cigarettes and other tobacco products by October. The reason for that decision is what we are discussing and whether or not it will result in people going to CVS to applaud them for this decision, and if it will make a difference in people finding it harder to buy their cigarettes so they won't be as likely to buy their cigarettes. We have lines open for you right now, and let's go to an email here. Scott from Michigan emails this story, Doctor. I wanted to quit so badly and had been so unsuccessful in my attempts. I got a large bag of number 67 crepe rubber bands from an office supply store and wore them every day on my left wrist. Whenever I would reach for, talk about, or even think about smoking, I would stretch the rubber band out to its limit and let it snap on the inside of my wrist until I could no longer think of smoking. I still wear rubber bands on my wrist to remind myself that I can never go back. Whatever works, huh?
Good for you. I think the message of this is that there is no single road.
Right.
Stopping smoking. Mm-hmm. My father, who was a real character, was a big smoker, and one morning he woke up wheezing, and he told me the story. He said, so I says to myself, who's in charge here, Schroeder, old man tobacco or you? And he quit. So there are many, many different roads, rubber bands, acupuncture, and so whatever works, works. But the evidence is the best that the combination of counseling and the seven different drugs to help you quit work the best. But, you know, that's great, and keep wearing that rubber band.
I hadn't heard that one before. Peg in Rice Lake.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm not sure you want to hear my story.
Well,
and
what
I
is it?
I am not trying to promote smoking at all. But I'm 78 years old. I smoked heavily for 50 years, quit about 12 years ago. And when I was into the doctor a couple of weeks ago, she was amazed. She said, your heart and lungs sound excellent.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at her and I said, that's so unbelievable. I was a asthmatic as a child. I had lung problems all my life. And here I am. My voice gets husky, but I got good lungs.
Yeah. Well, she's lucky. If you smoke that long, she beat the odds, really, didn't she, Dr. Schroeder?
Well, there are excellent data to show that, you know, let me back up. Some people think, gee, I've been smoking for 50 years or my patients have been smoking 50 years. The horse is out of the barn. But there are good data to show that no matter how old you are, if you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, and you stop smoking,
mm-hmm.
your life expectancy and your health will be better than your identical twin who keeps smoking.
Hmm.
And at age 60, if you stop smoking, you gain 3 extra years of life, and those are healthier lives. So many congratulations for stopping smoking 12 years ago. And I think the chances are that if you kept smoking, you either wouldn't be here today or you'd be much sicker. So your story makes the point, and I'm glad that you called in.
Yeah, thanks, Peg, very much for your call. Kevin is next. Hi.
Hi. Say, I was thinking how I got cured from smoking as a young teen. My dad threatened me that if he ever caught me smoking, he'd make me smoke till I puked.
Oh.
Well, he never actually caught me, but that's exactly how I cured myself was smoking, and I chain smoked. And anyway, yeah, I ended up just thrown up, and that was the end of me. I never went back to cigarettes again. I thought, well, you know, that's probably not a bad way to catch kids, to stop them, if you know your kids are doing that when they're a young teen, because as they get older, it might not allow you to do that to them. But I don't know. What do you think of that as a option for?
So how old were you when you had your last cigarette?
Oh, probably like 13.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, you started young.
And I'm 61 now, so yeah. Yeah, no, that really did it. Boy, I tell you, when I got up from sitting down, I was working on a vegetable farm. When I got up from my lunch break after I had smoked several cigarettes, they're looking cool to everybody else. When I got up, I was just green. And I started throwing up, and that was the end. I never did go back.
Well, you owe your father a huge debt because he must have loved you a whole lot. You know, one of the ways that some folks are helped to quit smoking is to do just what you said, to just sit in a closed room, smoke packs at a time, let the ashtrays sort of pile up, and then they get so repulsed that they say, I'm done.
You need to put together a book, if you haven't already, Dr. Schroeder, of all these ways to quit smoking that you normally don't read about.
One of my good friends in high school was cured as a law student because he was hypnotized.
Oh.
And he said, "I'm so cynical, this isn't going to work." And he said, "I'll be damned."
It did. Wow.
Yep.
Great. Kevin, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kathleen and Dr. Schroeder.
Hi, Tom.
My wife smokes about 5 cigarettes a day, and I have zero problem with that. I'm not the carrination of anti-smokers or smokers. She smokes a cigarette once in a while. That's fine with me. Certainly, some people smoke and smoke and smoke, and that's not a good thing either. But, I'm not going to get up on my high horse here and insist that no one ever smoke a cigarette.
Tom, you don't smoke?
I do. I have one in the morning and one after dinner.
Huh.
So, Tom, the good news is that you and your wife don't smoke much. The bad news is that even at those low doses, you're at risk, a much higher risk than non-smokers, for heart attacks or stroke. And if you don't believe me, look up the website for the American Heart Association or other groups. What happens is that it takes a very low dose of the cigarette smoke to make the inside of your arteries and the platelets more likely to clot. And that clot, of course, is what triggers off a heart attack or a stroke. So I'm not carrination either, but I think people ought to know the consequences of what they do. And although your chances of getting lung cancer are not nearly as high as someone who smokes, say, one or two packs daily, your chances of getting a heart attack or a stroke are at about the same rate as someone who's a much heavier smoker.
Mm. Thank you, Tom, for your call. More calls in a moment. We're talking about smoking this hour of the program and the decision by CVS Caremark, the country's largest drugstore chain in overall sales, that they're going to stop selling cigarettes and other tobacco products in October. Dr. Stephen Schroeder is responding to this. He wrote a piece, interestingly, in the February 5. Yesterday, it appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association on ending the sales of tobacco products in pharmacies and how important that is. He is a distinguished professor of health and health care in the Division of General Internal Medicine. He also heads the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook pages, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on that Twitter. Send us a tweet at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to Alan in Madison next. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Hello.
Mike, yes, hi. Are you there?
Oh, yes.
Okay. My comment is, my first reaction is, I don't like other people telling me what to do. My second reaction is with a little bit more thought, that it does affect all of us. The Obamacare program, or the health care program coming up, will depend on some success on having people healthy to begin with. So I think that, it does affect all of us somehow.
Sure, smoking does affect all of us somehow. I would agree with that, Dr. Schroeder.
Well, I think you're right. You expressed two things that are very often talked about. One is that this is a nation where people have the right to have choice. And what CVS has said, you're certainly welcome to buy cigarettes. We just won't sell them to you here so people can go elsewhere. And it's clear that if everybody stopped smoking, we'd have a healthier nation. And we would, in the short run, maybe spend less money on health care. In the long run, people would be living longer and having healthier lives and having more time to work and more time to be with their families. So I'm glad that after first thought, you were very kind of supportive of this move. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen, for the call. To Guy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good afternoon. A friend of mine many years ago had kind of a novel solution to quitting. I guess it worked for him. He took a couple of ashtrays full of butts, put them in a big glass jar, dump some water in there, and kind of let it stew. And every morning when he woke up, he'd take a big whiff of that thing in the morning. And I guess it kind of changed his, he reconditioned his idea about the smell and taste of cigarettes.
I thought you were going to say he took a swig of the tobacco.
That's what
juice.
I thought he was going to say, too, instead of his morning coffee. That might be something you could do, too, and then you would taste awful. Yeah, thanks, Guy, very much for your call. Jerry in Green Bay, hi.
Hello, Dr. Schroeder, Kathleen, how are you doing?
All right, how are you, Jerry?
Good.
Good, well, I was better up until a couple of years ago, but I quit for 12 and a half years, and I made the mistake of having just one.
Mm.
So then pretty soon you have another one, and actually right now I'm probably at like a pack last for 3 or 4 days, but I plan on quitting again. But so my suggestion was don't ever have one if you do quit. And another thing I did when I did quit, nicotine is a big part of the problem, but also the habit is, so I always had a toothpick or a piece of gum ready to go, you know, in case I got the urge for a cigarette.
Uh-huh. Was it hard for you?
It helps out.
Was it hard for you to quit the first time, Jerry?
Yeah, it was very hard.
Uh-huh.
You know, I watched my father die from emphysema, lung cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't want to end up that way, and I still do not want to end up that way, so I do plan on quitting again. One of the factors was I got a really stressful job a couple of years ago. So between that and just trying one, not a good thing.
Right. It's a very addictive product, isn't it? Dr. Schroeder.
Well, we're just hearing all these interesting stories from
we
people
are.
who are wrestling with this issue. And what the common element is, they know they shouldn't smoke. It's darn hard to stop. Many of them stopped on their own with kind of novel ways, be it an aversive therapy or a wristband or pressure from others. And I hope that you can, you know, it's great that you've cut down, but I hope that you can stop because it'll be good for you.
Mm-hmm. What, as a result of the piece that you published yesterday in the Journal of American Medical Association, what response have you had to that from other drugstores in the country? Anything, Dr. Schroeder?
Well, I'm actually in Washington now.
Oh, you are.
I'm here for a different kind of a meeting, but my email has just been full of people who I know who are ecstatic. They think the symbolism of this is so wonderful, and they're doing a hats off and a shout out to the folks at CVS and thanking me for being of help to that. I've not heard a single negative thing, and people are so excited. The people I work with are excited. The people at the University of California, San Francisco are celebrating it. So this is a big deal, and I'm hoping that it's just one further step down the march to making cigarettes history.
Yeah. And did the medical association, or was there anybody who was involved in lobbying not only CVS but other pharmacies to take this action or not?
The American Pharmacists Association has been feeling really strongly about this for probably 40 years because they're basically saying, we went to school to help people. When we work in pharmacies, we sell medicines to make them better, and yet as they go down the aisle of the cash register, they can buy stuff that's going to make them worse. So they've been pushing the pharmacies to stop. Now, it's interesting. Out in California, independent pharmacies, by and large, don't sell cigarettes, but there are so few independent pharmacies now because most of them have been taken over by the chains. And the chains understood the issue, but the economic argument made it harder for them to stop.
Yeah.
And as I'm looking out the window here, I'm seeing a man on a balcony stubbing out a cigarette as we talk.
Oh, well, when you finish the interview, if you don't have a meeting to go to, maybe you should go talk to him.
Maybe I will.
That might change his whole life. Let's go to Kate in East Troy. Hi, Kate.
Hi. I was just calling to say I quit smoking quitting smoking in 2002, and I ended up not being able to quit until I got pregnant in 2009. And then I didn't smoke. I don't know, I was smoking on and off in between that time, and then I didn't smoke because I had two kids, and then I was nursing, and then I tried to have a cigarette three different times, and I just got so sick that I just can't have any cigarettes, and I can't be around cigarettes anymore. So I don't know. I think it just takes a long time to quit, kind of like, you know, it just takes forever. You go on the bandwagon, you get off, or whatever that saying is.
But really, congratulations to you for quitting when you were pregnant. I don't know whether you know that smoking is the number one cause of premature babies being delivered, and premature babies have a much higher rate of being sick. So I hope your children are healthy, and the fact that they are, if they are they healthy?
I'm sorry?
Are your children healthy?
Oh, yes, they are. They were 8.5 and 9.5 pounds, and my son was actually 14 pounds at his two-week visit.
Ooh. Okay.
So my guess is they wouldn't be nearly as healthy if you had smoked during your pregnancy and afterwards. So you were a really good mom. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Kate, for the call. Gary in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi there. Hey, thank you for the show and such. I listen to you often.
Great.
One of the things is that CVS, yes, I'm very happy that they've made this decision. And I guess I have a question and see if you have an answer for me, I'm sure. But it's like starting a diet. I'll start tomorrow. So why are they starting in October?
All right. Good question.
I don't know the tactics of that, but I think they probably have to deplete their stock and maybe put signs up to let their customers know. I wasn't a part of that strategy, but I think when they first thought of this, they were going to phase it out over a 24-month period, and now they've shrunk it down to about a 9-month period, 8-month period.
Hmm.
So, you know, it would be better, if they stopped for kind of tomorrow. But they're so far out in front of the people who are there in competition with that I would say I can tolerate their phasing it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to criticize them for that.
Hmm. Thanks, Gary. Dick in Wausau. Hi.
Hi. I had smoked for about 20 years. I smoked cigarettes first, switched to a pipe, and I decided to quit. So I just quit cold turkey, and I had an awful time of it. I mean, you want to smoke, and you say no, and you want to smoke. It took me probably about 6 months to get to the point where I didn't want to smoke anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I went trout fishing. I like to smoke the pipe to keep the mosquitoes away. And after going through all that, I started smoking again.
Oh.
And it was one of those things that, after that, it's like, God, geez, why did you do that after going through all of that? And I started beating myself up mentally.
Mm.
And I went through that probably about a year. And, I mean, I just really, like I said, just beat myself up unmercifully, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So January 1st, 1986, I said, I don't do that anymore. Now, the interesting part is, from that minute on, I never had even the slightest desire to smoke. No desire at all. And I think a lot of it was just, again, I had beat myself up so much that it was good to not have to go through that anymore. And now I won't start again because I think I got away with something the second time.
I don't think you'll start again either. It takes up so much of your time, first of all, to smoke and also to think about not smoking. It really is, you want the next fix of nicotine. You know, it's a very addictive thing. It's a hard and time-consuming process, both to smoke and to not smoke, don't you think, Dr. Schroeder?
Yes, and boy, these stories are so rich.
Yes,
and
they are.
I'm impressed with the versatility and the ingenuity of the people who have tried in various ways to quit and how hard it was, and yet these are kind of stories of triumph. So I salute all your callers today.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, well, we salute you too. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Schroeder.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure being with you too. Bye.
Dr. Stephen Schroeder of the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, where he is Distinguished Professor of Health and Health Care. He also is the head of the Smoking Cessation Leadership Center and is working with 50 American health professional organizations and healthcare institutions to increase the rate of non-smokers in America. We reference his piece published yesterday in the Journal of American Medical Association on ending sales of tobacco products in pharmacies. Our conversation today, of course, prompted by the decision by CVS to stop selling tobacco. And no more chewing tobacco, no more tobacco in their stores as of the 1st of October. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to K.P. as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee, where the sun is shining, but it's still so cold. Monday, all things political at 1 o'clock, and our guest will be senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute Center for State and Local Leadership. And we will also be talking about Next Act Theater's latest production, David Mamet's Race, which looks at the issues of race and racism. So we will discuss that with one of the actors and with one of the directors. That's coming up. Thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead.
The UW-Madison School of Music presents a symphony showcase on Saturday, February 8th at 7 p.m. from Mills Hall. This free concert includes performances from the annual concerto competition winners, plus the premiere of a piece titled Poema for Saxophone and Orchestra. WPR is pleased to support live classical music performance. For more information, visit wpr.org/events.